Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who are wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection!
Hello, Happy New Year, and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay and Buster will look back on what was a very eventful 2017. We'll also go over the games over the festive period and look ahead to what this year has in store. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers. All right, how you doing?
Jay, we'll start with a kind of quick recap of the festive fixtures. We've got three games to look back upon. The first was a 1-1 draw against Dundee. Possibly in the end, I think it was regarded as quite a good point of a difficult game where we were certainly below par, found ourselves a goal behind, but dragged ourselves back into the game with Craig Tanner's penalty. The talking points from that game, I would say, were the players that came back from injury who didn't appear to be fit. Elliot Freer in particular was only on the park for about a minute before he was back off.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because that feels like absolutely ages ago, and I've clearly done no research for this podcast, because as soon as you mentioned 1-1 against Dundee, I was scrambling about in my head trying to work out what game you were talking about. No, you're right, I didn't actually read a lot of Steelman online over the festive period, so I'm not sure if it's something that was really discussed on there or whether it was mentioned on social media, but I think at the game, I think there were a few eyebrows raised. The fact that you had, you know, Cadden came back, went off injured. Freer came back, went off injured. You know, the little niggles with Carson and Hartley. I don't know what that says. I don't know whether maybe we're giving players too much trust when they turn up to training and say, yeah, I'm 100% fine, I'm raring to go. We just kind of trust that. And maybe there needs to be a wee bit more, you know, a more sturdy process, perhaps, I don't know. But the game itself, I think when you consider the run we were perhaps on at the time, the players we were potentially going to be missing, and then, of course, you know, ended up didn't miss, you know, Cadden and Freer as the game went on. But, yeah, I think to go 1-0 down and, you know, kind of scramble out the point, it was probably a good result. Dundee's probably one of those sides that when you see in paper that you're playing Dundee, you've got this kind of vision in your head that they're, you know, struggling at the bottom and they're not that good, but they've done pretty well under Neil McCann. It's something that I didn't think I would see. I didn't really see McCann going there and doing a good job. So I think all in all, when you consider you know, the game itself and the sort of the build up to the game with injuries and the run we were on, I think a point was probably a good enough result.
Buster, for all we talk about the injuries, and there were signs that Trevor Carson was maybe struggling. It was later suggested to us that he was actually basically trying to wind the clock down. Elliot Freer's injury left us with 10 men. The save that Trevor Carson pulled off in the dying stages of that game was a save worthy of winning a match. I think it definitely made the point feel even more crucial because of that save, because to lose to Dundee at home, for all we've enjoyed quite a positive start to the season, the wheels have been coming off slowly in December, and I think to lose to Dundee at home would have really been a bit of a warning shot, albeit we're going to go on and talk about two games that
have served as the warning shot maybe a couple of weeks later?
No, I think he's right. You know, as you say, Trevor Carson looked to be injured as well. And as you say, it was later suggested that he was, you know, playing the game, basically. World class save. I think Trevor Carson's probably the outstanding performer, or, you know, maybe because we didn't really expect much of him, other than, you know, Louis Moulton, his usual goals, to be fair. But Trevor Carson's been fantastic, I think. And, you know, it was a bit of a downer when he was injured as well. You know, Russell Griffiths is decent enough, but... you see, I think he's been basically our top performer there. And as you says, the point basically gave us a result in the middle of a lot of bad results. Well, gave us a point in the you know, a lot of bad results, bad losses. So it was good not to lose the game, but you know, at home Dundee, it's always a game you think you're going to win, but it's you know, it's, as I say, it wasn't the worst result in the world, as Jay says.
So we moved on and suffered the defeat in the midweek fixture just after Christmas against Rangers. What I just mentioned there is we'd got a bit of a warning against Dundee that we had to be better. I think we could consider ourselves quite fortunate to have went away from that game with a point. To then put in another, what was a very subpar performance, Jay, was extremely disappointing. We weren't at the races. It's not a nice place to visit at the best of times, but when you're as poor as you were up against a poor Rangers team as well. We had our chances, weren't able to take them, and I think deservedly were beaten on the night.
Yeah, it was. It was poor. Not just in terms of performance. I just kind of felt at times we just didn't look like remotely the same side as earlier in the season. You know, obviously against a team like Rangers, you're right, they're not particularly great. Pretty mediocre. You know, when you see teams... you know, like Kilmarnock, for example, managing to beat them, because they are a pretty poor side. If you go there and you've got the belief, whether it's Ibrox, whether it's at home, if you've got that belief, you can go and you can take points off them. And we just never looked like we had that belief. I know that we missed a couple of chances. You know, Tanner had a chance early on, and, you know, on another day, maybe we do get a goal. But I think, by and large, it just appeared a bit like a Motherwell side, perhaps, from... you know, Mark McGee or Stuart McCall's era. You know, there didn't seem to be much belief. I remember at one stage, I can't remember if it was 0-0 or we were a goal down, and Rangers had the ball at the edge of their own box. And I think Fisher was our furthest player forward, and he was on the halfway line. It was just, yeah, it was as though we were by that stage just trying to get through the last two games and get to this break. I don't know whether the run we've been on is just completely physically, emotionally and mentally drained the players, and it's just about, you know, it was just about trying to see out those last two games. But there was just something about the performance at Ibrox. A difficult place to go, no matter how poor Rangers are. But yeah, the whole performance just kind of was quite lacklustre. And it certainly wasn't representative of the sort of never say die, determined, up for it Motherwell that we saw in the first couple of months of the season.
That underlined the importance of the last fixture of 2017, the Lanarkshire Derby against Hamilton. And what transpired was yet another disappointing afternoon. We got ourselves in front. I think we looked very much in control of the game, right up until losing a penalty a couple of minutes before half-time. Whether it was a penalty or not, I've not actually admittedly watched the highlights back, because after a home 3-1 defeat to Hamilton, you're not really in much of a rush to do so. But that's another big loss in a game that we could afford to lose in. So we go into the new year now and a wee bit of a downer, I guess.
Definitely. You know, as you said, it's regardless of the, you know, the run or whatever we were on, it's a home game against your local rivals, Hamilton Accies. In the first half hour, I think maybe half hour, 40 minutes, I thought we were looking very, not very good, but we were looking very comfortable. You know, it was a great goal. We scored. Bowman done great in the left, put in a low ball, Tanner knocked into the goals. But for there, you know, I can't even mind if we didn't take any chances, but we certainly didn't really make any clear-cut chances. And I remember thinking, you know, this could come back to bite us. And as you says, penalty one each, like yourself, Zach, I'm not watching the highlights either, so... I don't know if it was a penalty or not. I think when you dive in and your arms in the air, sort of, you know, natural positioning, your arms and stuff. But I think if you dive in, try to block the ball, and your arms anywhere but by your side, you're going to get called on it. So I don't know. But as you say,
it turned out to be a really bad game. I think it was maybe about 70 minutes I left. Actually, it wouldn't have been, I think it was 3-1 at times, so it was probably 80 minutes I left, but very, very disappointing. And as you say, hopefully this break has come at a decent time for us.
Just on the Aggies game, for some bizarre reason, I put myself through the torture of actually watching the highlights back. And I think probably by the letter of the law it is a penalty, because Buster, you're pretty much spot on. He dives to block it. It's not a deliberate handball, but his arm is in an unnatural position. His arm's practically vertical when the ball strikes it. And I think, you know, it's one of those ones when it's against you, you probably claim it's harsh, but if it's for you, you'd be screaming for it all day long. And I think by the letter of the law it probably was a penalty.
No, I think you're right there, to be honest with you. Again, as I say, I've not seen it back, but if that happens against Mullow, you're going to be screaming for it and moaning when you don't get it. But even by the letter of the law, I think it is, the handball has to be deliberate. And, you know, you can say, does he deliberately throw his arm up like that when he's sliding or whatever? You know, that's a different argument, but it's a penalty. If it's as I think it would have been, you know, it's a penalty all day, I would have been screaming for it if it was Mullow.
And Buster, that wasn't the end of Peter Hartley's involvement in what was an untypically disappointing showing. I think the first one I can actually remember from Peter Hartley in a Motherwell jersey, but he had a pretty frustrating and disappointing afternoon. Finishes with a confrontation with Dougie Emery at the end, following the full-time whistle, pushes Emery to the ground and is, as a result, sent off. You're looking now at a 2 or 3 match ban for violent conduct. I know we like to see the players demonstrate passion and commitment, but that really was just a stupid way to be sent off. Easily could have actually just walked down the tunnel. And in fact, he should have walked down the tunnel. There's no reason for him to be running back 30, 40 yards to push over an opposition player, regardless of what's been said between Dougie Emery and Trevor Carson, where, to be perfectly honest, I didn't feel that Carson really needed to get involved either. He could have walked off, avoiding the Aki's players going to celebrate in front of their own fans. If the shoe was another foot and it was Dougie Emery that had pushed Peter Hartley, I think we would be possibly up in arms. And
no, you're right. As you say, although I said I didn't watch the highlights, I seen a clip of that on Twitter. I think it was Twitter anyway. But as you say, I don't know what's happened between Carson and Emery. We all know what Dougie Emery is like, sorry. So, you know, he's had a wee snipey word or two in Carson's ear. And again, that's complete conjecture for me. That's just what I think's probably happened. But, you know, it's, as you say, it's nice to see Peter Hartley sticking up for his teammates, you know, even being passionate about the loss. You know, he's upset, whatever, you know, it got to him, obviously. No doubt he'll be very regretful of that, but as you say, it was incredibly stupid, and although he had a bad game there, I think we're going to miss him in the Scottish Cup now.
Yeah, I mean, just on that, I mean, I don't see any need to kind of pure hero worship him or anything, but I think it's important to keep in mind that, you know, it's a local derby, the players are up for it, Dougie Emery's a wee wank, he's probably has been winding folk up during the game, as well as, you know, deliberately kicking the ball into the stand, but we didn't really hear much about that because it wasn't Celtic. You know, Hartley himself has given away a penalty. He also cost one of the other goals. He's had an absolute nightmare. I know it's, you know, I'm certainly not condoning it. It is stupid. He'll be punished by the SFA. I would like to think the club would probably discipline him as well for it. But I think it's, you know, it's easy for us to sit here and go, oh, he should have just went down the tunnel. You know, the emotions are running high, the passion's running high. It's probably our last chance to get a half decent result before we went into the winter break and we blew it. So I'm not going to, you know, hang him out to dry too much. I think obviously it's just boiled over a wee bit, and he seems that kind of character. But it's exactly that kind of character that also makes him the player he is. So yeah, you know, certainly not going to hero worship him, but I don't really, you know, it's not really a big deal.
Yeah, I think by the same token, I was maybe struggling to spit it out there, but I think that any time we win a game, particularly away from home, you want the players to be able to come over and celebrate with the supporters. That's what happens. That's kind of part of the emotion of the game. So I think we would have been pretty annoyed should one of the Aki's players have prevented our players coming over to celebrate with the fans when we beat them in October, so I think when the shoe's on the other foot, we've got to kind of, while everything you say about Dougie Henry is absolutely fact and correct, I just think it was a bit of a needless situation, and one that I'm pretty sure Peter Hartley now looks back on with a fair bit of regret.
Yeah, but as you said, I don't disagree with either of these here, to be fair. You know, it's something that's, it's the adrenaline there, you know, hopefully he's feeling passionate about the club, the result, you know, a bad loss, whatever, and as you say, it's just boiled over, but stupid thing to do, but, you know, as you hear Stevie Robinson say, you go again, you got him, go again.
So we'll work our way back with the review of the year, given that we've just finished a very busy December, 7 games, during which we've only managed to pick up 1 point, so as much as we knew it was going to be a difficult month, I think the expectations were for much more than what we've managed to get. Even when you consider we've had games at Firhill, home to Dundee, home to Accies, even a game at Rugby Park where we've had an excellent record in recent times, but more often than not, we've not managed to turn any of these games into 3 points. Jay, it's a bit of a concerning run. We've done ourselves a massive favour with the strong start that we had to the season, but it's been a bit disappointing that we've not been able to capitalise that and kick on, even if it was just a case of maybe getting a win at Thistle or beating Accies at home and Dundee at home. It would have really consolidated our place in the top six, but now we're beginning to look over our shoulders, and that was always a concern, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, maybe just not to the extent we've seen it. I do like your style, you know, going back the way rather than forward, and it means we can end on a high note, considering we started the season quite well. But no, you're right. I think
back to the start of the year and then talk about Mark McGeesey, man.
No, we'll cut it off. We'll cut it off at this season. But no, I think we all spoke about it, even on here, the fact that, you know, that run of games, that December in particular, looked really tricky, because even although you were playing the likes of Partick Thistle and Kilmarnock, you know, teams that on our day we would like to compete with, you know, the very fact that it was away from home at that time of year was always going to be, you know, an extra disadvantage. You know, playing against Celtic a couple of times, Hearts, Rangers, obviously, you know, I mentioned earlier, Dundee were doing well under McCann. Accies have obviously seen us off at Firth Park. So I think it's just went even worse than we expected. I think even the most confident or most optimistic Motherwell fan would have looked at December and said, that's going to be quite a tricky month. But I think it has just surpassed expectations in that regard, and I think that's what the worrying thing is. We all spoke about trying to get as many points on the board going into that run, so that if we took a bit of a hit, we would still be all right. I don't think very many people expected it to be quite as dire as it turned out to be. And I think you can kind of look back, I don't know just how big an impact it's been, but those three games against Celtic seem to have been the complete turning point in our season. When you factor in the week before we played Celtic in the Cup final, we'd went to Pittodrie and got a great 2-0 victory. It just seems that whether it's just we've put so much into that week, emotionally, mentally, whatever, physically, you know, niggling injuries. I don't know whether a lot of the players maybe, I don't know, had too much belief going into the Cup final, and it's just rocked their confidence that we didn't win it. I don't know. It's all ifs and buts, but it just seems those three games against Celtic just seem to have kind of, you know, you used the phrase about the wheels coming off earlier. That's exactly what's happened. We went into that Cup final, flying, looking really good, looking good for the top six. Maybe, obviously, didn't want to get ahead of yourself, but, you know, you start to dream, are we going to make the return to European football and things like that? And then you come back, you know, out the other end of that triple header against Celtic, and we've been absolutely dire ever since.
But I suppose it's a far too simplistic view to take that Louis Moll confirms that he's leaving the club and Louis Moll's injured and suddenly a forum stutters as a result, although I do believe that that has been a factor in things, particularly when you've got a guy that can score the goals that Louis Moll can. He was capable at times of almost single-handedly winning his games courtesy of his goals, but by the same token you lose guys like Cadden, Carson, you had Hartley out for a couple of games, Elliot Freer's been in and out the team as well. It's been a big time to lose key players all over the pitch.
I think it's been a I think it's been a combination of two things here, and I hate to say it, you know, I think Jay hated to say it there as well, but I think those three Celtic games did really take a, you know, knock us down basically, and then as you say, picked up a few injuries since then. I think it was four or five players out at the one time at one point, and it's been an awful month basically since then. There's you know, there's a lot of shite talk about, you know, is Robinson's time up, things like that, you know, but when you look at it, December was awful, you know, there's no getting around that, December was awful, but when we go back further, you'll see that, you know, it's only been December that it's been awful. You know, as Jay says, very busy month, very, very busy. I think after the Celtic game, you know, that was the only time we'd only had a week between games. But, you know, to not pick up points other than Dundee, I think, well, we drew with Celtic, I know, I suppose, actually. But other than, you know, to pick up 2 points out of all of those games was really poor. But I think it's just been a combination of the, you know, the Celtic games and then the injuries. It's, as you say, Mok missing has been a massive factor, but I've not liked it that, you know, other fans of other teams seem to be saying, oh, look, Millwall are terrible without Mok. And, you know, it's maybe going to be true, maybe might be, but, you know, that was the only factor in our poor month, basically.
See, I've got another take on it as well. Ever since Stephen Robinson started wearing that scarf and tartan tie, I don't think we've won a game either, so I think maybe it's time to actually ditch them as part of his get-up, because I'm pretty sure we haven't won a game since, so that's maybe something worth noting when he's getting ready for the Aggies game in a couple of weeks' time.
Superstitious, eh?
Well, just clinging on to anything now to be perfectly honest. Jay, the break comes at a time where just a nonsensical time, really, because you look at January as a month in terms of fixtures. You've got 4 games after the 20th of January, so 2 midweek games to finish the month. Why could you not just play 4 games over the Saturdays? We don't have any idea what the weather's going to be like late January. I'm sure if I looked it up, I would maybe be able to get a rough idea, but I can imagine it's going to be cold, it's going to be icy, basically typical January weather. By kind of shoehorning in these games to the end of the month, it's surely risking a chance of games being postponed. The pitches are harder, there's more chance of injury. It seems a pretty strange approach, and this is all due to this strange need for teams to get away and have a winter training camp. Can we not just go on with the football?
Well, yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on your head there. I mean, I was going to say, when you were listing all the reasons why there shouldn't be a winter break, unfortunately, the reason that there should be is because Celtic want to go to Dubai. And that is literally, that's the beginning, middle and end of it. I believe Rangers are currently in the States as well. I think I heard that in the radio on the way home.
But that's it. Tomorrow.
I imagine we've got some easy jet cheap options just to make use of the winter break. I can't imagine the SFA decided to implement it because Motherwell fancy a jolly in Tenerife. I think that we all know that you know, Celtic kind of control the game, and I don't think there's any doubt that the need for them to get their mid-season break is the reason that we have a January break. That, I'm not going to criticise it though, because I'm delighted, because we've been so shit in the last month or so. It's nice to have a wee break. And in fairness, you know, again, we can only speculate on why we've been so poor. But if indeed it is, you know, just being absolutely scunnered with those 3 games against Celtic and really just not having a break to kind of get our, you know, things together and get our heads back in the game and stuff like that, then the break possibly has come at a really, really good time for us. So I'm certainly not going to badmouth it, but, you know, if you need any reasons for why there's a winter break, you don't need to look any further than Celtic Park.
To be fair, I think that, as you say, the break has come at a great time for us. Did you say we're off to Tenerife, Spanner? Sorry, aye?
Yeah, tomorrow.
I hate that, to be honest with you. I hate that because they're just going to come back and it's going to be freezing here still. The worst months, in my opinion, are usually sort of February and, you know, the beginning of March. It's always really freezing at those points. You know, as you say, you said you don't know what the weather's going to be like, but I think we'll see a few postponements in February as well. But you know, the winter break has come at a good time for us this year. It's, you know, that's just the luck the way it's worked out with people coming back from injury, hopefully, and, you know, as you say, maybe getting our heads right, but it's not something I generally am interested in.
No, it just seems strange with the scheduling. I'd much preferred as well that you put your midweek games, or try to have the midweek games during the summer months, so whether that be at the start of the season or at the back end of the season, where you've got the light nights, it's just a much more attractive proposition to go along to the football. In these occasions, I think one of our home games is a home game against Ross County. It's a lot of nonsense, to be perfectly honest. It's a shame that Motherwell and Ross County aren't able to come together and actually arrange to play that game during the break on a Saturday. But I suppose there must be people behind the scenes at Motherwell that believe that the break is beneficial. I don't know if you're allowed to play games during the break as well, it must be said. But yeah, it just seems, as much as anything else from a fan's point of view, I don't think it's very fair. But that's what it is. And as you say, Jay, we can't really do much to change that, if anything at all.
Just a last point on the break as well, sorry. And, you know, sort of winter fixtures in the break. As you say, there was a load of games in December. Few of them run about Christmas and New Year. I don't understand why we play at that point. Because, you know, if there'll be a lot of people out there who spend a lot of money at Christmas and basically can't afford to go to these games if they're away games, you know, at Ibrox or whatever. Not that we usually take a big following at Ibrox anyway, but I don't understand why we play over Christmas and New Year either, to be fair.
The other element of the break is January in the last couple of years certainly has been a busy month for us in terms of transfer activity. While maybe in October, November time, we didn't really expect that we were pretty content with the squad that we've got. I think now we've had the departure of Louis Moll, the results aren't quite as good just now, and suddenly people are looking for changes. Curtis Main's already arrived from Portsmouth. I would expect at least two or three more signings by the time the window's up. Talk of potential departures as well, which there's a few that wouldn't come as much of a surprise, it must be said. Do you think that Stephen Robinson will be pushing on and trying to almost kind of redesign his squad, certainly to a certain extent, for the Accies Cup game and for the remainder of the season?
I think there's some work needs to be done. You know, as she says, going back a month, we were talking about how our squad was, you know, the healthiest body-wise and, you know, cover-wise. It was the healthiest squad we'd had in a while. But, all right, we had four or five injuries at one time. But, you know, as you say, when that came about, we didn't really have any options up front. Craig Tanner's come in and done really well, but I don't think he's an out-and-out striker. I don't think he sees himself as an out-and-out striker either. But he's the one that's been, you know, I think he scored our last three or four goals. So I think there's, you know, Curtis Main's come in, as you says. Ben Hennigan was hinting on Instagram that, you know, he was coming back, picture him in a Motherwell strip, maybe sort of hourglass timer thing. But again, I think there's what needing to be done, but you know, Stephen Robinson knows that as well, because although I didn't watch, you know, the interview back, I believe he said I'm wanting to bring in this, that and that. So I think we'll see a couple of faces, and you see, I don't know if it's going to be different options, you know, tactical, you know, tactics wise, or if it's just going to be like for like, and, you know, we've got our set formations and things, you know, the three at the back and the four, we switched to a 4-4-2 at times, so I don't know.
Right, we'll continue the look back over the year, and say, I think there's some clear highlights, isn't there, Jay? The Betfred League Cup certainly threw up a few fantastic games, the late win at Ross County, then followed by the demolition job against Aberdeen and the subsequent semi-final against Rangers. These games kind of reinvigorated the supporters, didn't they? They brought back that belief in the team and the excitement, which hasn't been seen for a couple of years at Fir Park.
Yeah, that's it. Well, certainly, you know, it's been a long time since you would consider as anything like a cup team. You know, it was almost the tried and tested that you would get excited for the early round draw, and then, you know, the names would come out, and it, Murdoch would be drawn against whatever team was given the task of knocking us out that season. So to actually go and not just have a cup run, you know, you look over recent years, there's certain teams have had, you know, a lot of lower league sides, you know, the likes of Gretna, Queen of the South, you know, they piece together cup runs, partly with good results, but partly with a bit of luck in the draw and things like that. But, you know, that was we had a really, really difficult run to the final. Obviously, the final itself was a step too far, but, you know, I think as much as that was disappointing, I think when you look back at the League Cup as a whole, I think we've got a lot to be proud of. That Ross County game, I think, you know, the Louis Moult lob against Rangers in the semi-final aside, I think Ross McLean's winner in Dingwall in that Cup second round tie up there, I think, is my highlight of the season so far. Just the absolute scenes. You know, it was a Wednesday night, so the crowd wasn't as big as it would have been. Not that it would have been necessarily huge for a League Cup tie at Dingwall anyway. So, you know, a couple of hundred Motherwell fans there. You look at the game, obviously, in hindsight, Steve Finney was you know, certainly right to send off Charles Dunn. But at the time, it felt as though he'd been really hardly done by. I think a side prior to the one we were witnessing early on this season, maybe a Mark McGee side, wouldn't have went on and won the game. We would have perhaps tried to grind out penalties. And instead, you know, we kind of took everything that was thrown at us, turned that into the determination and the desire to go and win the game. And then obviously Ross McLean's goal was a cracker, and you had the scenes with the, you know, fans on the pitch and the players over celebrating with the supporters. It was just sort of the quintessential kind of Motherwell experience. You know, it's games like that that you support a team like Motherwell. So that for me was probably my highlight of the season so far. And then to, you know, follow that up with, as you said, a demolition at Aberdeen in the quarterfinal. It wasn't even, you know, a jammy victory. You know, we took on what is widely, you know, regarded as the second best team in Scotland, and we took them to absolute pieces. And then, of course, the semi-final was just an absolute joy. Obviously, rode the luck a little bit at times, which you have to do in those occasions. But, you know, Louis Moult's second goal in particular, as I've already mentioned, was just phenomenal. So as disappointing as the final was, I think that regardless of what happens between now and the end of the season, we can look at our League Cup campaign at least as being something to be really proud of and full of cracking memories.
And Bust, I suppose, despite the fact that things haven't been quite as good in recent weeks, the league has thrown up some excellent games as well. The 2-0 win at Pittodrie, the win over Accies, where I think despite not being at our best, we kind of showed the steel and the grit that this team has become pretty much renowned for. There was the excellent comeback at Hibs as well from 2-0 down. We really responded in great fashion. There's been plenty of highlights in the league despite the fact we're perhaps taking a few steps back in recent times.
No, as I say, it's For the cup final backwards, there was very few disappointments. I think I don't think I can think of one where I honestly was really disappointed with you know, a performance in the league. Actually, that's a lie. St Johnstone away in August was pretty shite, to be fair. But you know, there was circumstances in that match which you know, we spoke about at the time, the sending offs and things. But other than that St Johnstone game, then I can't really think at any time where I was disappointed with a league fixture. Sure, we didn't win them all. We, you know, we lost a few, but it's you know, as you says, it was a great first sort of 3 or 4 months to the season. And you know, it's just unfortunate we were so bad in December, because it's totally flipped the season on its head. You know, I think we were sitting third or fourth at one point. And from then, I don't think we've actually won a game. But, you know, they came fast and furious in December. But, you know, even some of the games before then were fantastic. And it's something that hopefully we'll pick up for you in January.
The year started in pretty worrying fashion. Of course, we were fighting it down at the bottom of the table. And that remained right up until the final couple of games, actually. But you look back in the final stages of Mark McGee's tenure, where we went to Pittodrie and lost 7-2, we've lost 5-1 at home to Dundee. It was looking very, very grim. Stephen Robinson's come in, he's steadied the ship, he's got the results that we needed and required to stay up. It was a bit of a by hook or by crook situation where we just had to win. It didn't matter if it was an attractive, free-flowing football performance, we just had to
get the results, and that's exactly what he did. He then got to work, 18 players in over the summer. Yes, some have made a bigger impact than others, but he's been an absolutely key figure, and Keith Lasley deserves a lot of praise as well, because he seemed to have really struck up a very strong understanding. Stephen Robinson obviously signing a new deal, Keith Lasley's done the same, so it's, we seem to have a managerial partnership there that the club have got a great deal of faith in, and now it's going to be interesting to see how they recover from what is possibly the first run of disappointing results, and the first time that they've perhaps been receiving a wee bit of negative press for results.
Well, that's it. I think, you know, obviously in these situations, we've spoke about it before, I don't support any other teams, I don't know how other, you know, club supports react in these situations, but obviously as soon as you're in a terrible run, which we're on, you will get, you know, dissenting voices, you know, the I told you so is that kind of thing, you know, people starting to make murmurings about, you know, is it time to change the manager and things like that. But for me, that kind of chat at this point is just absolute pie in the sky stuff. For, you know, the very basic situation is that we are sitting eighth, I believe, is that where we've ended the year?
I had it earlier.
We're sitting eighth, and we've reached the domestic cup final. Now, I completely understand that football isn't, you know, as straightforward as that. You know, it was obviously, we are in a poor run, and you can argue that it is relegation form, and you can argue that had we been on that run from the start of the season, then Robinson would have lost his job. All, you know, pretty much accurate statements, I would have thought, but the season we've had, we are eighth and we've reached the domestic cup final. If you'd offered that to any Motherwell fan on the planet in the summer, I think the vast majority would have bitten your hand off for it. So on a more general basis, I think that we're on track, we're having an alright season, and if we can get things sorted over these couple of weeks, if we can get back on track, then we can go on and still have a really, really good season. I think any talk of, you know, really serious talk about changing managers and things like that is just so far removed. At the end of the day, Robinson earned his right to be given the job by keeping us up last season. Had a massive rebuilding job to do. I think he's held his hands up to certain mistakes. I think he's held his hands up for the way we approached the Celtic games, for example, and the aftermath of that. Obviously, a lot of injuries, a lot of tired legs. So he's obviously still learning. But I think, at the very least, Robinson and Lasley have absolutely earned the right to lead us back into the second half of the campaign and to turn things around. Now, that's not to say that the run we're currently on isn't very concerning, and it's not to say that if we, you know, go out of the cup to Accies and then follow that up with, you know, disappointing results in the weeks following against, you know, County, Hearts, Hibs, Partick Thistle. If you're then going into, you know, the start to mid-February, still on this terrible, terrible run, then I think that, you know, that's when fingers will start to be rightfully pointed. But I think at this stage, the management team as a whole have absolutely earned the right to get us out of the run we're in. And I think that we've shown enough, you know, in the season to date, that's possible. As I said earlier, if we can just maybe get over whatever it is that's caused the downturn over these weeks, you know, go away, get together, maybe actually forget football for a couple of weeks and get back to what we were doing earlier in the season when we return, then I'm still confident that this can be a good enough season. That's not to say that I think we're going to, you know, shoot back up the table, but if we can finish, you know, 8th, 7th, 8th, comfortably away from relegation and perhaps get into the last few weeks before the split with an outside chance of making the top six, having already made the domestic cup final, then I think that's a successful first season for Stephen Robinson.
I think you're right there as well. If you'd have said to, you know, any of us in May of last year, come, you know, the 1st of January, whatever, you'll be sitting 8th in the table and you'll have been in a, you know, the League Cup final, you'd have butt your hand off for that. You know, the price of the price of us being so successful is that when we do hit a wee blip, you know, we start to panic, basically. You know, there's quite a few daft statements I've read on social media regarding Robinson, you know, people wanting rid of Robinson, basically. But I think that Robinson's, and Lasley, as you said, both said, done a great job. Disappointing, and as you said, very concerning, Jay, the last few results. But I think it's something that he had he's kept us up, and then he had a job to do, rebuild the full squad. He set out how he was going to play, how he was going to do it. I think there's a wee bit of a danger that he's being sussed out by quite a lot of the managers now. So you maybe have to look at something else. I don't know, another way of coming about getting results. But as you say, you know, this break, I think this break could do us good. And if we come back, hopefully a lot stronger than we've been in December, I don't see, you know, we're only 4 points above 11th place by the looks of it, but I don't see that being much of a problem as long as we can get our heads together and come back fairly decent.
Yeah, just when you mentioned there about, you know, it's just I mean, obviously I'm not mindlessly defending Robinson by any means. He's made mistakes, particularly in the last few weeks. I think some team selections, some substitutions. We don't know who made the decision to pick the team for Dundee in terms of who gave the nod for likes of Freer and Cadden and guys like that. So I don't know if he's rushed back players. So it's certainly been a learning curve for him. And there's certainly some of the criticism is warranted. You can't be a manager of a top-level club, go through the run that we've been on and expect to escape criticism. Some of the criticism is warranted. But overall, I think that, you know, as I said, where we are is fine. And at the very least, you know, he deserves the chance to correct that. And I'm confident that we can do. Mm-hmm.
And of course, the million-dollar question is, though, how do you replace someone as pivotal as Louis Moult has been? Louis Moult's goals have been as well. I don't think that on our budget we're going to be able to get a direct replacement or even a player to the same calibre. I suppose what we've got to hope is that we can continue to use these lower leagues in England as a breeding ground for talent and bring them on and bring them to Scotland and hope they can produce results. There's a bit of weight in Curtis Main's shoulders, I suppose, arriving at the club. Louis Moult's left, we're needing to fill the void. And I guess that's instant pressure for the new signing. He's had a bit of pedigree in terms of the clubs he's played for. His stats aren't that encouraging, it must be said. But again, it's one of these ones you've got to give these guys a chance and see how it works out, I suppose.
The thing about Moult leaving, and obviously, like every Motherwell fan on the planet, I'm a massive Louis Moult fan, gutted he's gone, big loss. But we'll have this conversation, we've had this conversation so many times. Marvin Johnson left, how will we replace Marvin Johnson? You know, even if you want to go back even further, Jason Fadden's left, how will we replace him? This is what a club like Motherwell do. You know, we bring in guys, we sell them, we worry about how we're going to replace them, then we get on with it. You know, whether Curtis Main is that man, it remains to be seen. I think it could be argued that we're not exactly blessed with striking options as a whole. I don't necessarily think that Curtis Main is coming in to replace Moult as a direct replacement. His goal tally certainly wouldn't suggest that. It may be just to give us another option. I think, you know, perhaps Times fans are too quick to just assume that he's coming in to replace him. I wouldn't subscribe to that. I think we may see another striker coming in to actually, you know, hopefully replace the goals that Moult will be taken with him. But, you know, as great a player as Louis Moult, he was scoring goals in some of the worst Motherwell performances I've ever seen, particularly last season under Mark McGee. So as great a player he is, as he is, and as much as he'll be missed, you know, we'll just get on with it. And by the end of the season, we'll have some new strikers and we'll have moved on. And no doubt, if somebody like Chrissy Cadden moves on at the end of the season, we'll be back talking about how are we ever going to replace him. So we will replace him. It's as simple as that. It's just a question of who it is and when we do it.
I think, you know, as you say, we will physically replace him. Right now, I think every Motherwell fan is thinking it'll be impossible to replace his goals. But, you know, you wouldn't have thought that when we signed Michael Hignan or John Sutton. You know, these guys scored, you know, 15 plus goals as well. Hignan, for what I've seen in Hignan before he came to Motherwell, I was kind of upset that we'd signed him, but I think Hignan was absolutely fantastic. And don't get me wrong, we had this conversation, we were talking about the players around him, and that was a better quality of player, fair enough. I don't disagree with that. But as you say, we will physically replace Louis Moult, and like yourself, Jay, I think it was me and you had a chat on our wee group chat, saying, yeah, I don't think this guy's an out and out Louis Moult replacement. As you said, Sparra, he's signed for Middlesbrough in the Championship, so you know he's obviously got something about him, but he's not really if you look at his stats, as you say, his goal tallies is not something that, it's not something you'd expect him to come in and score 30 goals, basically. But I think, as you know, as we said, and as you just said, Jay, I think there's two or three more players to come in. You know, two maybe max, but I think another one of them will be a striker.
Yeah, I think it's essentially a case of give these guys a chance. You can't really go on the stats. You would hope that we've done a due diligence, and I would imagine we've got a lot of hardworking people at the club that have sourced these guys out. I guess every transfer is a wee bit of a gamble, is a wee bit of a punt, but I think that you don't get to clubs like Middlesbrough if you've not got something about you. And
yeah,
if you can get a run of games and avoid injuries, which is something that by all accounts has plagued them a wee bit at times as well, then there's every chance that it can be a transfer that comes good for us.
It's this easy thing, he's a striker, how many goals has he scored? But I mean, you know, it's that kind of thing. No doubt loads of folk jumped onto their keyboards, typed in Curtis Main and looked at his Wikipedia stats. I've just done the same with Lukas Jukiewicz, who I'm sure we would all take back at the drop of a hat. Played 38 games for Swindon Town, scored 5 goals, then had appearances for Everton, Plymouth, Argyle, Huddersfield Town and never scored. And yet he came to Motherwell and was brilliant. You know, I mean, there's five senior goals in 38 appearances. It's hardly great stuff, and yet it was a great player for us. So, I mean, it's easy to look at Wikipedia and go, oh, he's shit, before you've even seen him wear a Motherwell jersey, simply because it has got a low tally next to his goals column. But I think that's a really, really basic and pretty poor way of looking at it. It might be a success, it might not be. That's the joy of a new signing, and partly one of the reasons why you should get excited and interested about a new signing rather than writing them off straight away.
No, I agree with you, and as you say, I've seen people seem very disappointed at the fact that he doesn't seem to be a goal scorer, but I'm a big believer in your face fitting, basically. Again, if I go back to Michael Higden, I don't think anybody would have expected Michael Higden to score, you know, 26 goals in a season, win the Player of the Year. When was the last time a Motherwell player won Player of the Year? You know, I'm a big believer in if Stevie Robinson or whoever, you know, even go back to Higgin again, McCall at that time, whatever, if they sort of play the way that suits, you know, their strikers or whatever, I'm a big believer in, you know, it's your face fitting, basically. You know, you can be shite at one team and come to Motherwell, score 26 goals, earn yourself a move to Holland, and then come back and retire a couple of years later because you seem shite again. You know, so I'm a big believer in that, but hopefully, as you say, Curtis Main comes good for us. Whether or not he scores goals or what, you know, I've looked at his YouTube highlights and there's some belters on there, but, you know, that's the work of a magic agent, I suppose.
Aye, and just to back it up with another annoying example, Nick Blackman, who came to Motherwell and absolutely scored a barrel load in that first half of the season before he then went up to Aberdeen, had played 12 games with Macclesfield, 1 game with Blackburn, 5 games of Blackpool, 12 games of Oldham Athletic, and had scored 3 senior goals, like in the entire lot, and yet came to Motherwell and banged in the goals. It's a complete non-starter. The boy's a striker. He's obviously got something about him for us to be chasing him for a while. He might turn out to be a goal scorer, he might not. I mean, Ryan Bowman is meant to be, you know, a goal scorer and has failed to find the net as regularly as he would have wanted. You know, it can work both ways, so we'll just wait and see what he offers.
I'm glad we've got your full attention here as you sit just googling random players trying to back up
that's,
your argument
that's
there. That's
that's right. I'm sitting playing poker.
At least I had the courtesy to finish my cornetto before we started. I suppose the kind of other example is the boy that signed from Millwall or Crystal Palace. What was it, Lewis Graben?
Yeah,
who's went for crazy transfer fees down south, but it looked like he could barely kick his own arse when he was with us. So it can, yeah, you're right. It can work both ways. I suppose looking ahead to this year, I think we've basically covered it over the last three quarters of an hour or so. But is the goal just to stay up and consolidate our place in the league, or do either of you have aspirations to achieve any more than that? I suppose you're always going to have ambitions and aspirations to finish as high up as possible, but what about kind of realistically are you hoping for?
First of all, I'm looking for us to stop the rot here. You know, this run we're on is atrocious. So the only way you can sort that is we'll win. Our next game is against Hamilton Accies in the Cup. So if we can pull it off then, you know, and maybe get in a wee bit of stability, I'd like to see us go on another semi-decent cup run. I don't expect us to get to the Scottish Cup final or anything like that, but, you know, if we can put together two or three wins in the cup, again, if we finish 7th, 8th, whatever, fair enough. As long as we're a wee bit away for the relegation, that would do me fine.
I think in the short term, it needs to be about dumping a team with Dougie Emery out of the cup, because he just showed himself up to be a horrible wee cretin that we all knew he was. But other than that, I think it's more just about trying to stabilise things. As I said earlier, if we go on and finish 7th or 8th or 9th and have reached a domestic cup final, well, I think we would all be quite content with that. You know, the club have never, and Stephen Robinson has never, even when we were doing really well and up at 3rd or 4th and into a cup final, you know, Robinson said more weeks than not that the aim was simply to avoid relegation, and that won't have changed. And in fact, the run we're on will probably have reminded a good few folk at the club that that is the aim. So as long as we stay up, then I think we need to look at it as expectations met. But as I said earlier, I still think there's enough about the squad, and we've shown enough earlier in the season that we can go on and perhaps finish, you know, at the higher end of the bottom six. And, you know, as Buster says, if we can get past Accies and maybe get a wee bit of luck, then perhaps there might be another, you know, tie or two in the Scottish Cup for us as well.
And obviously that would be in a year that we've performed very well financially in terms of transfer dealings. I suppose a cup run is always the aspiration, isn't it, to just further boost those coffers and come the summertime, put Stephen Robinson and Keith Lasley in a stronger bargaining position for when it comes to negotiating contracts or trying to bring in guys, obviously just have a bigger budget, essentially.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think it can work both ways. I think, you know, it's great to have the money, but then when it comes to, you know, negotiations and things like that, if you're trying to get a player in the club you're trying to get them from, know you've got money, then that can maybe, you know, make them hold out a wee bit longer. But obviously we would all want more money, and I think this season has been fantastic. We look back to the Ben Hennigan deal, you know, the idea that we get, I think we all proclaimed it as one of the best bits of, you know, transfer dealings that we've seen at the club for quite some time, you know, selling Ben for about 400 grand and bringing in Paul Hartley on loan. And if we then go on and bring Ben Hennigan back in on loan, then it's just, you know, an A-plus for a great bit of business. And you factor in the money for Louis Moult, the factor in the money for the cup run, the fact that we're only really budgeting to avoid relegation. So anything above that is going to be a financial bonus anyway. I think that, you know, off the park, things are really bright. Yes, we're in quite a dark position at the moment in terms of the run we've been on. But, you know, for the first full season of fan ownership, I think off the park, everything's going really well.
Guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got for just now. This has actually been fairly therapeutical, actually, after a bad run of results. Finishing up with a bit of positivity there, that's good stuff. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your time.
Cheers.
Are we not going to mention the fact that you'll be taking a short hiatus?
Gary, if you want, I wasn't going to mention it.
All right, we've sold him, and in a couple of weeks he's going to post a photo of the podcast on Instagram in a cryptic Ben Hennigan style move before he then comes back on loan.
I've ordered an hourglass on eBay, so when the time comes, I'd say it will be hopefully not too long, but there will be a kind of couple of months. I suspect that I'll not be here, but the guys will gamefully play on, and yeah, I hope to be back as soon.
They'll come back to us and say, can we take him on loan, as she says. But Spanner's maybe got a new job, and they might not let him do any other sort of media work. Whether or not this qualifies as media, I don't fucking know. But basically, he's in negotiations to, because we're a non-profit organisation, we're doing this for a laugh. So Spanner's maybe trying to get himself back, get his employers to allow him to come back, but he'll be gone for a wee bit.
On the plus point, if Sparra isn't allowed to come on the podcast because he's not allowed to do any other freelance journalism, that then gives me and you free reign to go about telling everybody we're freelance journalists.
Oh, that's a great shout, yeah. It's definitely going on the CV then, aye.
I am going on LinkedIn.
I'm glad that it's benefiting you as much as it's benefiting me. But
well, as you say, we've got a couple of weeks before the next game, so I take it we'll maybe take a week or two off as well with a podcast, and we'll probably join by our other mate, Barra, I think his name is. He sounds a bit like you and us, Barra.
Aye. If you can pay his wages, then...
How good your Mexican accents, Barra?
I've downloaded a voice changing app along with my hourglass that I bought on eBay. Right, anyway, let's wrap this up because this has been 5 minutes of absolute nonsense. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. The other two will be back in the next couple of weeks. I'll be back shortly after that. Until then, thank you, goodbye.